Skipper celebrates. Every show is a celebration. Richard Skipper celebrates the best in entertainment. Each show, Richard delivers the artists you love, showcasing what makes them unique, never gossipy. The antidote to a sometimes hectic world. Now, here's your host, Richard Skipper.
Happy Friday, everyone. And welcome to the latest edition of Richard Skipper Celebrates. For those of you who are here for the first time, welcome. My show is all about celebrating life, celebrating art, celebrating artists. There are lots of things to celebrate if you just look for them. Each day I look through these calendars of odd holidays to celebrate. Today is National Launch Balloons to the Heavens Day, something that it is not environmentally safe to do anymore. But it was fun when it lasted. But you can blow bubbles to the heavens and still do that. It's also National Root Beer Float Day. It's Lucille Ball's birthday. Yesterday, we celebrated my 42nd anniversary of coming to New York. And two very special ladies also celebrated an anniversary yesterday. Madonna and Robin are here, and I am so thrilled that you're here. I want to thank our mutual friend, Rosie Apuzzo, for making this all happen, and I want to thank you for being here today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's our pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. Now, do you have any other devices open? Because we are getting a slight little echo here. So we want to make sure that we only have the one open. Otherwise, we're going to get a little feedback there.
I don't think so. But my computer, maybe. But we don't have you. We don't have us on.
Okay, great. Well, we'll get through this. As I mentioned in my introduction, yesterday was your wedding anniversary. So congratulations on that. In addition to the wedding anniversary, what else are you celebrating at this point in your life?
Well, probably the longest either of us has been with another person. I used to stop at the 3.5 year mark. So the fact that we've been together 18 years is amazing.
Now, is it 18 years total, or how many years were you together before you made the decision to get married?
We were together 14 years on our wedding day. Okay. So, but it took me a long time to get her to say yes.
It took a long time to get her to say yes?
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you, my husband and I, we're going on 32 years together. And so when we were together 21 years and the day that it became legal in New York, I asked him to marry me. And I can only imagine if after 21 years, he said, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's really disappointing when that happens. I got her at Disneyland. We stood in front of the castle we gave each other our engagement rings there.
I mean, both of you, I mean, what I love about both of your stories is, first of all, both of you have very incredible careers on your own, but together you've also created magic, Disneyland, but you've got these incredible life together. This past year and a half with everybody have forced us to spend more time with each other than we've all planned on. What are the pluses and minuses that the past year has brought to the two of you together? And if one of you want to leave the room while the other discusses.
I think I should leave the room on that one. I'm not going to come out looking good on this. You are in a different environment every day of your life. You're in the same environment, which is different from the norm. But we had some opportunity this past year to sort of explore other, my cousin has a farm in Arizona, and we spent a lot of time there at the animal rescue farm. And I, more than Robin, because I was also just getting to know my cousin really for the first time. So we had some time together and some time apart. And I think that was really healthy for us, because she might not love me as much right now. What do you think about that?
No, it was great.
I mean, the pluses are that I got to know this. I mean, Robin and I knew each other very well. We were friends first. And so we know how to be together regardless of the situation.
Yeah. I think that helped a lot, actually. Yeah. We also have a two-story, so we can split our space. So if I'm in the middle of a Zoom, I can be on one end and she can be on the other and with her conversations. And we've just really learned how to be able to finagle through this without it being too cantankerous with each other.
And when we do get that way, we just drink. So
good for what I hear. Well, I want to ask you, how did you meet, first of all? And what do you think the secret is for two people being in the same business, being able to make this work? My husband is a landscape architect. I could not imagine being in this business with someone else, with all due respect to both of you, with someone in the same profession as myself.
Well, that's an amazing question. It's a great question. I mean, for us, we both cheer each other on no matter what. If she has an audition, I have an audition, we're like, how can I help you? We've got the ring light. We've got the backdrop. Mm-hmm. We just help each other. Sometimes we have the same audition, which is great because we get to do it together. Do you want to add to that? Or?
Yeah. You know, I think because we both respect each other's art, and we know how important it is. I think that has a lot to do with it as well. We take a very similar approach to everything. At the same time, we also take different approaches. Mm-hmm. So it just we help feed each other.
Now, I'm gonna talk to each of you individually about your career paths. But before we get there, I did mention that yesterday was your anniversary, and I saw these incredible videos of your wedding. And one of our mutual friends, this is our 6 degrees of separation from Lucille Ball. Carol Cook was at your wedding. And to see her in white revelation, because I mean, she told me, you know, Richard, I have 27 black gowns in my closet.
We've seen her closet. She's
I
not.
Know. That's right. And have you heard the stories about her wedding?
Yes,
a little bit. I don't
a little
think
bit from her and yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you very quickly, because it's a very funny story. When she got married, Lucille Ball was her matron of honor. And Robert Osborne from Turner Classic Movies was the best man. And she said to me, and I'll clean it up, she said, Richard, what the F was I thinking? She said, I had Lucille Effin Ball as my matron of honor. No one looked at the bride.
I could just hear her saying that.
Well, I love her so much.
Oh, we just talked to her last week. We checked on her and Tom last week. They're doing really well.
We love them. We love those two people so, so much. And to be roasted by her was probably the best part of our wedding, except for obviously us getting married. Yeah. But just having her do that was the greatest honor.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, she's amazing. And she told me exactly how much she spent for her white dress and how much she spent on Tom's suit. And that's why we didn't get the lavish gifts we were going to get. The wedding cost her $1,000. She said,
I can just imagine. Madonna, I'm going to start with you. I want to know a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up, and your initial exposure, if you will, to the arts. And did you grow up in a household where you watched movies or had a good arts and education program? And how did you get started on your path?
Thank you. That I appreciate that question. I grew up in an Italian Catholic family and grew up in Texas. My family's from New York, but we ended up in Texas because my dad was in the military, met my mom there, and that's where we grew up, near Dallas, Texas, in Irving, actually. And I grew up in the, you know, I was born in the 50s, so I grew up watching I Love Lucy. I mean, Lucy was actually, Lucy was on all the time. You know, we just, we watched sitcoms. We were one of the first people who got TVs in the neighborhood. My mom and dad would have the console with the TV on it, in it. And if that blew out, they would just buy another TV and put it on top of the console so that we had like multiple screens. And, you know, we'd flip the channels. I grew, my brother was actually in the arts. My brother died of AIDS in New York in 1991.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And he was a great inspiration to me. He moved to New York in the 70s. Much like you, Richard, you know, didn't have a lot on him, just went, you know, and he inspired me by doing that. And so my parents put me in dance when I was 6 years old. So I love dance. I danced till I was 42 or 43, like full on. And as a result of that, they would come to all my shows and support me as long as they could. And then when I was, you know, as I got older, I went into sort of musical theater, although I'm not a singer, but I was a good dancer who could speak on pitch. You know, I'm not a trained singer at all, but I did all the character stuff. I loved doing that. And then I eventually, when I moved to Washington, D.C., I studied at the Studio Theater Acting Conservatory and ended up, you know, studying Shakespeare and Greek theater and Chekhov, all the classics. And so I sort of transitioned into theater at that point in my life. And then not to, you know, drag this on, but I did a little bit of extra work in D.C. and I met a girl. I went to Seattle for a minute, and they were shooting The Fugitive, Tim Daly's new version of that, in mm-hmm. Seattle. And I'd only ever done like background work as far as film and television, and it was very minimal. So I was in theater, and I went to set, and they're like, "Here's your trailer." And I said, "I have a trailer? I have 5 lines. Oh my God." And they were like, had an umbrella. They were walking me to set. And I said, "I'm moving to LA. I need more trailers. I love being on set." So that just became, you know, my inspiration. And of course, just my brother, you know, as long as he was alive, we were always sort of in sync about the arts. And I would just always wonder what he'd be doing today, because it would be phenomenal.
So. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Wow. So the title of your autobiography is going to be "It Started with a Trailer."
Yes. And I carried my old tap shoes with me.
Oh, wow. What an amazing story that is. And Robin, same question, essentially. How did it start for yourself?
I'm actually from LA. And there was no one in my family in the arts. So I was kind of like the little odd person out all the time, oddly enough. And it wasn't until recently I too met one of my cousins, and she was the same way. She was the only one in the arts in her family and thought she was the odd man out. And now that we've connected from Ancestry.com, she said, "Oh my God, you're an actor too. What?" Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Started as an actor and then went into doing hair for film and television. And in fact, when Madonna moved to LA, when we met, I would bring her to set. So it gave her a chance to really feel. I had 2 shows going over at CBS Radford at the time, and gave her a chance to meet cast members and see how it worked on set and things. And so we were like the best of buddies, hanging out, and then it just kind of circled around from there.
We didn't tell you that sort of tale, but it's kind of long. And thanks 23andMe, because I also discovered I have like a half sister on that thing, but that's a whole different.
Is that something you want to share, or is that another show?
Oh, no, I did the 23andMe, which is, I found my cousin on social media, but within that, my cousin's in New York called me and says, wow. They said, "You might want to check your ancestry. I think you have a sister." And I was like, "What?" And I looked at her and I realized after seeing who her mom was that my dad was quite the Italian ladies' man. He was very
man about town.
Man about town, and very much reminded me, you know, when I was young, Desi Arnaz, like he had that sort of charisma and that, you know, and so, yeah, I recognize that that was most likely true. And then, of course, DNA doesn't lie. So she's great. She lives in Texas. We just met. I mean, we haven't met in person, but it's interesting. Yeah.
Now, you both came together, you said it was 14 years ago that you first met. You both have had 18 years. Yeah. You both have had previous relationships to this. Was it an easy process coming out for either or both of you in Los Angeles? I'm guess growing up in one of the more metropolitan cities that it's an easier process than it is for myself growing up in a small town in South Carolina.
You know, it wasn't hard for me. My mom raised us that we were all the same, didn't make any difference, no matter what you're talking about, no matter what anything. And she was single and, you know, with children and young, you know, married at 15, kind of a thing back then. And so we were all raised that it didn't make any difference. And we had a lot of, just call him uncle something.
Yes.
And then there was a call of aunt in there. Mm-hmm. So that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big deal. So, yeah. First time I said, well, this is my girlfriend, it was just part of it.
It was just part of it. And I mean, and for both of you, I mean, when did the activism begin in your lives?
Well, mine began early. I actually came out in the just after high school in Texas and in Texas. And I was at the bars, you know, a lot, just trying to find my people. And then but I was never afraid to just say who I was because people knew me and they didn't seem to mind. We've had conversations with people I grew up with. And but what was your question? You asked something about
your activism.
Oh, yeah. Activism. Mine started when I was at the AIDS quilt in the mid 80s when that was all happening. My brother was diagnosed in 1987. But prior to that, I had been doing work with like sort of volunteer work. But really, when the NAMES project started and the AIDS quilt came, I worked every show, I guess, every display of the quilt. I think it was there three times. It went from 2,000 panels to 45,000 or 48,000 panels within that time frame. And it went through a different presidents. The last one having been Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, who actually were the first people, the president that I saw. I was a few feet away from them when they were holding hands and walking through the quilt. So that's when my activism really kicked in. And then of course, after my brother got sick and I was just like, nope, this is not how our community is going to be. And I am very grateful to have been around for that because there was so much care that we took of each other during that time. And I long for, not for that, but just for the way we are together and the sort of unity and that nothing else mattered. We just had to get from day to day. And that was, that really inspired me to continue my activism.
Great. Great. And I want to get back to where we've gone through for the last year and a half let's start there for a moment. What is the biggest impact that the past year and a half has had on the two of you beyond the obvious things that we've all gone through? How has it shaped your life? And what are some of the changes that have taken place in your life that you feel that you will carry forward when we're on the other side of COVID, hopefully sooner rather than later?
Well, this wall used to be tan, first of all. We went from beige to every color under the
floor. We're redoing our kitchen, so I know what you mean.
So we basically, Robin, I should let you start.
Go ahead.
We really reevaluated our lives. You know, I think that we sort of stepped back from all the sort of norms that we were in and how we would sort of think of what we had to do every day. And we just went, hey, you know, even though the industry was shut down for a while, we were still like finding ways to work together or with a little theater group, you know, a little group of actors who just wanted to keep our chops going. We sort of re-engaged with people in a different way and with each other, because we were sort of, okay, we got to do a new reel. This isn't going to be forever. Let's, you know, we sort of started to get ready, but we also took the time, since it was so unknown, to just be, to just not do any, we couldn't do anything. So we just, you know, sort of did that too in the process.
It was nice to sleep in for a half a second.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know,
we're up and running. So
the marking point for me is March 12th, because that's when all the theater shut down in New York last year. So what did your calendar look like on March 11th of last year? I know that you've got a new film, which we're going to talk about in detail, because I'm very fascinated by this film and I can't wait to hear about it for a lot of reasons. What did your calendars for both of you look like last year when everything began to shut down?
Mine was busy. We were just opening up pilot season. I manage actors and writers. Mm-hmm. And we were just getting ready to launch pilot season. Come February, like coming out of January, out of the new year, the holidays, blah, blah, blah. February, they start coming through. By March, we're in full swing and we're getting actors out there. We're getting writers out there, things like this. And then all of a sudden, that was it. On breakdowns, during the busy times, we average anywhere from, I'm going to say 10 to 15, maybe 20 pages of breakdowns. On each page is 60 breakdowns. That's film, television, theater, and stuff like this, to maybe 10 breakdowns total the entire time.
Excuse me for interrupting. Did you see it coming, or did it come as a big shock to you?
I did not see it coming. No, but I will admit too, I was pretty hunkered into, besides watching Rachel Maddow and what was going on and all the crazy of that whole thing, I wasn't thinking of anything else. It was very, I did that head in sand kind of thing, because my focus was, this is what we're dealing with that, and then trying to get my actors out. So I wasn't paying any attention to anything else beyond that, to be honest with you. So when it came to a slamming stop, it was pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And I was actually, for 2 years, I was the executive director of LA Pride. So during that time, during 2019, we reinvented LA Pride.
I want to talk about that for a moment. Before starting today, I read your statement that is on the website. And was COVID the deciding factor for you?
It was, it wasn't. It was sort of a yes. COVID definitely inspired that change. But it was also that it was a good thing. That shift was good, because then I was like, look, you're not getting any younger. You came here to act. You came here. This is all I want to do. Like, get everything else out of the way and do it. You know, I came from a, you know, my background was, you have to have a job, like a real job. You know, we've all heard that from people. And so in my sort of head, I've always struggled with, am I going to make, you know, I've always had that sort of like stability, inspiration from my parents, for lack of a better word, but I just like, no, I just need to trust that I can do this. And immediately like booked a double national commercial with two spots. And then I was like, okay, this is cool. And then it just started, it opened me up to be able to do what I really wanted to do. So while it wasn't exactly what I probably would have done had COVID not hit, it was definitely, I took the universe's strong, strong message and said, do what you love and stop doing everything else. I mean, you know, obviously not stop, but just like, that's my focus. Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest impact that you brought to Pride over the 2 years that you were there? And what do you think is the biggest impact that having that position had on you as far as an artist and as a human being?
That's a wonderful one. I love you, Richard. I love your questions.
Thank you.
You know, pride is humanity. Pride is activism. Pride is love. Pride is, rage. Pride is everything, you know? And so it was really in my first year there, I was talking to the community and seeing, some people felt that they weren't included for some reason. So I feel like the biggest thing that we accomplished.
I want to interrupt for a moment again, but I want to ask you, did you pursue this or did they come to you and ask you to do this?
They came to me.
How did that come to be?
I've been sort of doing fundraisers. That's how I met David Galligan. That's how I met Carol Cook.
Oh, my God, and yes.
By doing the stage event.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I'd been doing fundraisers and I still, fundraise and, that's how I might give back in what I love doing for the community. But I was, professional, I was an executive director. So basically I was doing fundraising and one of the board members and I had worked together on something and he said, you'd be great for this. You really need to apply for this. And I thought, okay, and I really didn't ever think I'd get it. I was just like, okay, and then it just kept happening and it happened and I got it. And so it just sort of happened organically, I guess. I was not pursuing that, but I was glad I was there. And I think one of the most proud things for me was bringing the Two Spirits community in. There was the Indigenous community felt sort of alienated from LA Pride specifically, but there was, I'm sure it happens all over. And, so they did an opening ceremony, and that to me was my most, of all the things that happened. I mean, we had Paula Abdul, we had a great, great lineup. So that kind of creativity and that kind of, so that was all my worlds in one, like the fundraising and my arts and my creativity. We got to create spaces for people, and we created a free space, and that was also huge for the community where they could network, and just be and play.
So, and this question is for either of you. When, where, and how did Pine come about?
Oh, that'll be you.
Working our chops, we belong to the AFI, the SAG-AFTRA Conservatory at AFI. So they do student films, the American Film Institute, and it's like right down the street. We're like, let's just sign up for that. We've been a member of the conservatory for years. And so the students there are quite incredible. When you do a film with them, you do not know that you're not on a great indie set or even a studio set. It's professional. It's beautiful. They treat you respectfully, and they're also learning. So I love them. I love every single student that with whom we've worked. And so
it is part of the Screen Actors Guild. So. Yeah.
You've done other projects for them before.
Yeah, we do enjoy. I mean, it is the next generation of writers, producers, and directors. I mean, it really is amazing.
And they're supposed to be, student films, but you get, like in the case of Pine and another one that I did, where they're amazing and they're ambitious. And they're like, we didn't even know it was getting submitted to a festival. They go, we heard from them about 2 weeks ago, and they said, we got great news. We can't wait to tell you about Pine. We shot that 2 years ago together. So we both basically auditioned for those projects. I mean, it's the same process. They call in actors and then you go through an audition process. So they wanted to cast me because they'd seen me in something else. And they're like, we're looking for your, and so she auditioned and we both, obviously we got it.
So you auditioned together?
No, I think I auditioned first.
No, I think we chemistried after that.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, Actors Equity, are you either of you members of Actors Equity?
No, we are not.
They just this, within the last few weeks, they've opened up for an open door policy. If you can prove that you have professional credits over the past couple of years, you can buy into Equity now. Which opens the doors for so many actors.
Oh, yeah.
People who have been excluded in the past, everything, it's an incredible thing. And I'm thinking, as I'm listening to both of you speak now, do you think that there's a possibility that these types of films at some point could be recognized by the Academy?
Well, they are, absolutely. Some of the projects that come out of AFI go to Sundance. And some of them are recognized for the short film category with the Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And because I think once they get done, then they start submitting out from there. So.
Yeah, and I think those are mostly like their thesis films. This one, Pine, was they're called cycle films where they work on each other's projects. And this was a cycle film. And so we had some nudity in it and some stuff, you know, that happens.
Well, for me, I mean, I have not seen the film. It's going to be streaming later this month. Am I correct? Or is it next month?
It's this month.
Yeah. This month. So the title, based on the short blurbs that I can find on it, it's like secretive to me, has a double meaning for me. So if you can tell everyone a little bit about what the story is about, and then I've got some questions I want to ask about the two of you working together, as far as the characterization of these two women.
Well, I'm always, you know, if there's a description that an older lesbian finds, I'm the older lesbian. So I've just, you know, it's the story of a woman who's just broken up with someone and basically just goes out to try to find herself. And in the process of that, finds another human being. Yeah. It's a visual essay. You know, it's not, it's beautifully shot. But it's all visual. There are no lines in this.
Yeah. None. Wow.
No, it's one of their MOS projects. Yeah.
And how long did it take to film this?
We did it in a weekend.
We shot it in a weekend, but then we went back and did this.
We had to do one pickup because the cameras broke down. So they gave them a pickup. Yeah.
So this was done 2 years ago. And how long ago was it that you found out that this had been submitted and had been accepted into the film festival?
Two weeks ago.
Yeah.
Wow. It's, this is just within the last 2 weeks.
You found out probably right after we did. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I have a question that I'd like to ask both of you because I'd love to get your take on this. There's been a lot of talk lately. Ian McGregor just played Halston, and there's been a lot of talk within the community that roles such as Halston, who was an openly gay man later in his life, of course, should have been played by a gay actor. What are your thoughts on this process? Do you feel that it should be specifically to gay actors, or do you feel that it should be open to anyone who is right for the part?
I struggle with that. I'm not going to lie.
I will be honest. I struggle with it as well. I have to be honest with you.
I do. Just like the movie Prom, putting James Corbin in that role. I think he did a beautiful job, but
I do too.
I think that there are some amazing gay actors out there that could have done just as beautiful or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't mean to put either of you on the spot with that, but it's a discussion that I think is worth having, you know, for those of us who are open in the community. And do you find, I mean, you've been, for each of you, how long have you been in the business? And what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in the business that you think are for the better? And what are things that you feel that we still have a long way to go for?
Oh, for one thing, I can say gender identity is definitely shifting. When I started in LA, it's been about 19 years ago. I came here and I went to work for a talent manager, not Robin, just so I could, because she wasn't one yet, but just so I could learn the business from the inside. And we were like pulling people's headshots and throwing them in a packet and sending them over to a casting office. And now it's all, as Robin described, the breakdowns every day. Mm-hmm. And in those breakdowns, though, it would be like male 30s to 30s to 40s, you know, usually a description of race or whatever. Now I think, and Robin can speak to this more, but gender is, they're asking for trans actors. They're asking for gender non-conforming, non-binary, which I think is a huge, great step in our industry. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting because when we first opened Mad Catch, going through breakdowns, you knew if it wasn't specified a specific race or ethnicity, didn't make any difference. You knew it was white. Crazy, right? You just knew it was white. Now, unless it's a period piece to be period accurate, the floodgates have opened and allows us to put every race possible within, like, so that it looks like the world. So it looks like what we walk around in every day. But it's nice where in breakdowns, it used to be male or female, and that was it. And now we have male, female, trans, non-binary. Like, they're starting to recognize it. And I'm seeing it in all of my breakdowns now, where these TV and film and theater are being recognized within our community more so.
And, you know, and blowing the binary of what, you know, even if it's a sort of like, aren't they doing that with, are we allowed to talk about the League of Their Own or anything?
No, not yet.
Okay, never mind.
we have it's really hard for me because I always say Mama likes to brag about her babies and I can't.
Well, I'm just saying that some of these projects are casting out of the also the racial norms. Like, Black folks are being more, hopefully, we're not anywhere where we need to be, but I think it's going in the right direction. Yeah. I think we just continue to blow out the boundaries on that.
Well, just recently we had a production of Oklahoma in New York, and the actress who played, and she won a Tony Award, the actress who played Ado Annie was in a wheelchair. And I heard an interview not too long ago with an actress who is a little person, and she says when she walks into a casting director's office, they immediately think Wizard of Oz, Elf, Radio City Music Hall, Christmas shows, anything like this, except for the fact that she is a wife, she's a mother, she's all the things that she is. And it's our culture. It's what we are taught to believe. You know, do you think that we will ever get to a point ever where people, where those breakdowns are as wide open as they should be, or we hope that they will be?
I think we will. I do. I really do. Just the fact that in the last 2 years alone, and even more so, even during lockdown, I think that made a big difference. It kind of busted through a different, from what we went through with the George Floyd thing, what we've gone through recently with the AAPI community, things like that. I think that is really helping to break all that. And we're of a generation that we're trying to rethink what was programmed into us as well.
Yeah, I think young people will help that happen faster as well. It's not happening fast enough, but
exactly. It
is happening. And yeah, you artists, I admire, like, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda and people who do who just, you know, here it is. And so, like, that's what we need. We just need more of that and more of that extraordinary, exquisite artistry that just doesn't, you know.
On some level, I think that people are happy that it's happening. And then on another level, I think that people are not happy that it's not happening faster. With the controversy that we just had with In the Heights is a perfect example of that. And he apologized immediately, you know. So we're little baby steps, and perhaps they need to be giant steps that we're taking as we move ahead. Robin, I want to ask you, in New York, you don't have to be licensed to be a manager. Is that different in LA?
It is. Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest misconception that people have about the job title that you hold?
The crossover from manager to agent is just allowing them to understand the difference of what it is that we do individually. But I also make it clear I have my license exposed.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no question. Unfortunately, this is an industry that we all know what goes on the inside. So anytime I can protect any one of my actors, I do represent a lot of our LGBTQIA2+ community. So just knowing that they're safe, that's kind of a big deal for me.
Mm-hmm. Are there still issues as far as the LGBTQ community is concerned that we are still addressing in the industry that we are really lacking in?
Oh, absolutely. Better than we were. Same thing with the Me Too movement and the Time's Up, you know, in dealing with, you know, women in our industry and not just the lack of equal pay, but how we're treated. They've now brought in, what are those called, honey? Not sex coordinators, maybe.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
When there's going to be intimacy or even
intimacy,
things like that. So, and especially within our LGBTQIA2+ community, we need that because we're just bringing that out into the open. So there has to be boundaries and safety for them as well.
Now, are both of you in Los Angeles right now?
Yes.
And what is your comfort level right now with everything that's going on? I mean, we're hearing one thing in the news, but what your experiences may be quite different. I just came back from Provincetown, which I'm sure you've heard very much in the news, and I tested negative. What is your comfort level right now in Los Angeles as far as in the workforce is concerned?
The workforce, I'm more comfortable on set than anywhere. Everybody's been vaccinated. Everybody has to prove it. Everybody takes COVID tests regularly. I did two on that 2-day shoot I just did for another little film. Like you do, and it was, you know, you just know that everyone is taking extra precautions. People are masked unless they're working. And then it's very briefly, you take it off to do your scene and then put it back on. So as far as the workplace, I feel good here because I think that everyone has stepped up. And I just heard today that our numbers are, our spike has leveled out a bit.
So that's great. That's
good news. Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about Outfest and the importance of it and where this film fits in right now and how we will be able to see the film?
Well, Outfest, you know, it's a great honor to be part of that. I know other films have tried to get in there that haven't been able to get in. So we were just so happy that that actually happened. And we did another documentary a few years ago. It wasn't in Outfest. It was in, there's one called LA Dances.
What? Oh, Dances with Films.
Dances with Films. And then they also Soho Film Festival. And so being in a film festival is just wonderful because mm-hmm. you're getting to experience each other's work anyway. Our film is part of Girl Shorts, which is all short films,
All women.
All women, yeah.
Female identity.
Yeah. So that's very exciting for us. And also just, you know, there is going to be a physical event, but it'll be, you know.
Small
and socially distanced and all of that. But it'll also be streaming. So I think you can go to Outfest. Outfest. LA, I guess.
I'll put the information on the YouTube page as well so that people can get information for this. And are there plans for this film beyond Outfest in terms of other festivals around the country, or is it being submitted?
Probably, I'm guessing.
I think so, yeah. This is the first one, though.
Yeah, I'm working on another one, or I just worked on another one. Unfortunately, Robin wasn't in that one, but we work on different ones sometimes. Yeah.
This was actually our first film together.
Well, I wanted to ask you, working on a film like this, I mean, I haven't seen the film. It is about someone who's seeking, another partner or life after a breakup. How are you able to separate that when you go home at night? You've been living with these characters on set all day. How do you shut that off?
Wine.
W-H-I-N-E or
W-I-N-E? Yes, both. Wine and wine. We're just so organically, I don't even know how to describe it. We just don't, and we can actually talk about things. We love debriefing and downloading and, you know, talking about our experience. And to us, that's sort of like, okay, we're back here now. We're together. We're Robin and Madonna. And we're having these, you know, we're just having conversation about that, those two characters.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I mean, it's.
And even when she goes, like the most recent film that she did.
Dream House of Salt.
Dream House of Salt. Coming home and hearing her day and learning about the character that she had created with the director. They created this whole film together. She, her co-star and this and the writer-director created for how long?
Yeah, we got to have almost like a theater experience where we had rehearsals and she didn't fully write the piece until the three of us had time to have a conversation about it and like create, just talk about these characters. And that was really, that's not an experience you often get, especially with the little, you know, the films that we're talking about. Like, but this was just wonderful. So, and the same with Robin. If she has, she's done some period pieces, and she comes home, and we like, well, she'll tell me, and she'll show me a picture, and I'm like, oh my God, that is brilliant. Like, I didn't even, some one she did, I didn't even recognize her. so it's a mutual, it's a love, you know, and it's just like, we are just so ecstatic. And I got to say that I feel that vibe in LA anyway. And I love New York. I always feel, I love being in New York. Both of us do. And I always feel like my family's there and my heart, you know, I feel that same kind of love here with the people who are working, who are just trying to create. I mean, we've just did a huge script reading with a woman who's writing this amazing script. And it's just the creative juices of this, like being able to be in those moments and create together and watch things shift and watch people, even though they're really good, you like see characters shift. And, you know, I just, we thrive on it.
The development part of it is so much fun.
Well, for me, it's all about the collaboration. When you've got great collaboration, there's nothing better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, as we are starting to see the other side of COVID, how do you both see, I mean, what are your plans over the next, let's say, 12 months?
Oh, mine are like nonstop all the time anyway, so go right ahead.
No, I mean, just keep our energy, keep our focus, yeah. keep working, you know, we love working, and just stay healthy. I mean, yeah. You know, I guess the hardest part of our work is not knowing, you know, going to having so many auditions all the time and not, you know, in film and television, if you didn't get it, that's it. Just, that's it. You did the audition and that's it. And that happens more often than not. So, you know, those moments when you actually do get to celebrate something, it's just so incredible. And I think we're just, you know, for us, it's just keep our focus and energy going there. And yeah. And keep just trying to be better all the time. We have this group that I was talking about, the actors. When I first came to LA, I studied with Dee Wallace.
God, one of my favorites. I love her dearly.
I love her. She's instrumental in helped me change my life, because I was not in a good place. And she's just an amazing human being. And really helped all of us get out of it.
Gabrielle is an amazing person as well.
She is.
Have you read her book?
Not yet.
Oh, what an amazing journey she's had.
Is it the one,
F-Y?
F My Life? Yes. Yes, and we will read that. I just love Gabrielle. We used to call her Gabby. And I remember when Dee was like, she doesn't want to be called Gabby anymore. I was like, okay. She's just a beautiful artist too. I mean, and we've been very, very fortunate. The people with whom we've surrounded ourselves and who have just wanted to be, or who we've been in the same rooms with, it's been really great for us. And now we get to be in the room with you. And, you know,
it means a lot to me. Thank you.
I'm looking at all the people. I was like, why does Richard want to interview us? We haven't really.
The question is why not? I mean, absolutely. I'm all about celebrating. I love your energy. I love marriage that the two of you have. I love the fact that you got Carol Cook into a white dress.
Let me tell you how fun this was. We decided that we were going to have everyone in white. We had 200 guests.
They hated us.
All in white.
They're like, does this wedding make my ass look big?
Donna Pascal sent me a note and she was like, is this wedding make my ass look big? Because if you're going to show a film, you can just show it on my ass. I'm like, just get dressed and show up.
You know, part of that, the white was very representative of our relationship. Because first of all, white, one of my favorite musicals is Sunday in the Park with George. And one of my favorite parts of that was white, a blank page or canvas, so many possibilities. And that's how we saw our lives, is this blank canvas, even though we'd been together for a long time. And then, and also white was the suffragette movement, and white was like, white is the absence of color and the presence of all the colors. So, mm-hmm. You know, for us, it was very symbolic. And plus we just wanted to mess with people and see if they'd actually do
it. Oh my God, it was funny.
And everybody but David Galligan wore white.
Did he come in black?
Black. Yes. And I said, I'm going to put food in your hand and you're going to be the caterer because you are absolutely not Matt. Yeah, he did it on purpose, but we love him. We love him in his black too.
So. You know, when we got married, we patterned our wedding after Truman Capote's black and white ball. So everybody was in black and white at our wedding. Everybody was in black and white, and we had 165 guests, and it was the same thing. People were going, everything's in black and white. I said, you'll love it. And we've got great photographs 10 years ago. So that was great. Now, I want to play a fun game with you. I've got some questions that are just generic questions that are not specific to you, but just questions that I put together based on my readings, things, and just response. And the first question is, of the people you know, who has a natural sense of style that you most envy? And I think David Galligan, you're the first one on the list. So who has a sense of style that you both envy?
Of what? Of each other or of people we know?
People you know.
Well, I'm always the one who's like the non-binary. I love all the non-binary. I mean, I love Robin Wright. Because I like gritty. I love. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for me, style is going to be different from her style. Mine is Frances McDormand. Mine is like, mm-hmm. you know, Tyne Daly. That's my jam. Mm-hmm.
I like those as well. But then I also tend to lean towards the MGM and bringing back the glamour that, you know, the 1950s.
Do you have somebody who you like?
And Lauren Bacall and Tallulah Bankhead. And yes, I'm one of those queens.
Great answers for both of you. What one thing in your life has caused the most harm to your health over time?
Say that again.
What one thing in your life has caused the most harm to your health over time? And I know that you're both vegans. So did you, I mean, you both have given up meat. Since you've been married, since you've gotten together, at what point in your life did you both become vegans?
Well, probably about 15 years ago. Mine was for the animals because I just, you know, I'm an animal rescuer, an animal person. And then I started seeing some of the atrocities that they were dealing with. And I was like, nope. I mean, but the health thing. Did you want to talk about the vegan thing?
Oh, well, I was a vegetarian when we first started dating. And then just, you know, as we're now developing, and so much easier in LA, easier ways of going vegan. And you know, because you ask any one of them, the hardest thing to give up is the cheese.
mm-hmm. But now there are so many.
There's so many amazing plant-based. Well,
Madonna, there's a great quote on your website that says, "If dogs don't go to heaven, I want to go wherever they are." And I saw that quote today, and I just fell in love with it. You probably have already answered the next question. The one thing: what is the biggest? I'm going to ask this since we're there. What is the biggest benefit for both of you over being a vegan? And this is your commercial now for veganism, why we all should be vegans.
She tapped me for that one. Well, the biggest thing is, first of all, I'm healthier than I've ever been. I would out my age, but I've been around for a while and I've probably never felt better because I don't feel, I grew up in an Italian family. We ate meat like, it was like off the animal. I mean, it was just like we were eating everything. I grew up in an Italian family restaurant, actually. So I ate all the meats. But my body feels so much better. And I've lost a lot of weight after I became vegan as well, just because, I mean, you could not lose weight and be vegan. You could eat all the sweet stuff too. Mm-hmm. But also for me, it's just, it's a conscious choice. I feel a consciousness by not eating meat. I mean, it's the physical and also the sort of emotional energy that I have from not supporting the torture of animals, I guess.
That's great. When did you show the most courage ever in your life, either of you or both of you?
Most heard. Hold on, I got some. I don't know. I think. You know, it's hard to say that you're courageous. I think just that I'm courageous. I just think that walking into an AIDS hospital in New York City in 1989, when it was, you know, it wasn't an AIDS hospital. It was St. Clair's, I think.
St. Clair's, that's right. Yeah.
And there was an AIDS wing, mm-hmm. and they had everybody isolated.
I remember. I went there.
And so walking in there and not feeling any reservation about walking right in that room with the young man who was in there, like, I didn't consider that courage, though. I just was like, I don't care.
I know. You know? Mm-hmm.
So I think, I don't know, that may be one of the better moments in my life. But I don't know. I also think as sort of getting married is very courageous. Because, you know, it's just, I don't know, you know, Robin had a different opinion and a different feeling about marriage than I did. This is the institution. And so mm-hmm. I found her very courageous for doing that, even though.
Great.
Yeah.
So would that be your most courageous, Robin?
Oh, no. There's just although that took a lot, I'm not going to lie. She knows it. You know, I don't know, honestly, how to answer that, only because I don't look at it as courage. You just step into it automatically. I think women are more innate to do that, mm-hmm. Because we're the nurturers, by trait, by birth, by oddly, I don't know, you know. So I don't look at things that I do as being courageous. I just think it's just something that should be done, you know. Okay. You just step into it. That's it.
And for both of you, who is the one person that you can most easily anger?
Her mother.
By breathing in and out.
Is that true for both of you?
Yes.
Who was the best friend that you ever had outside of each other?
Oh, growing up?
Growing up.
I still have my best friend. I said, and she was the one who gave Madonna my wedding ring.
Wow.
Yeah. And mine is the other one. Gail Beckman. Gail and I did Carousel together in 1981 in Chicago. And she played Julie and I played Louise. And we've been best, dearest, closest hearted friends ever since. I could tell that woman anything.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. Well, you may have just answered my next question. Who is the one person that you each can be most candid with?
Probably actually her for me.
Mm-hmm.
Same. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. What is the most amount of money that you would spend for proof of your suspect? This is a great question. What's the most amount of money that you would spend on your partner to surprise them for an outrageous gift?
Well, I bought her a farm, but it turned out she didn't want it. She's a city girl. We bought a farm last year during COVID next door to my cousin's rescue farm. And then, you know, since then, actually my cousin Joanne is she and her husband Dave are buying it back because they actually have, I'm going to do a little plug for her work, the Miss Foundation, and she's a traumatic grief counselor who rescues animals and helps people through traumatic grief, and they basically heal each other. So that farm is going back to the Miss Foundation.
Can you give me the information for that, and I will make sure that I include that as well?
100%. And it was just on the Oprah Prince Harry mental health series. It's called Travel Care Cool. Farm. Yeah. So anyway, so yes, I did. And she's like, I don't camp. I don't do country.
I told her that when we first started dating. I'm not a dirt bugs camping lesbian. I'm not.
I love
high heels mean everything to me.
So, Robin, I think you have answered my next question, which is for both of you, who is the person that you find hardest to please?
Of each other?
No, really, of us?
No, in general, in general.
My mother.
My mother.
That's very true, actually.
I want to tell you, I am in love with both of you. This has been so much fun for me. I hope it has been as much fun for both of you.
Oh, my God. I got to tell you, I was a little nervous, but you're so
Thank you. Don't go anywhere for a moment. I want to thank everyone for being here this afternoon. I don't take it lightly that you could have been anywhere else for the last hour. And the fact that you chose to spend it with us, it means the world to me. If this is your first time here, please subscribe to Richard Skipper Celebrates on YouTube. Tell all your friends about this channel. Get them to subscribe as well, because I'm all about celebrating. Life is too short. We've learned that over the last year and a half. We're reminded daily of this. Let's celebrate each other. That's what it's all about. I also end every show by telling everyone to go out and do something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. Go to your Facebook friends list, and the sixth name that pops up, reach out with a phone call. Not an email message, not a text message, not a private message, but a phone call. And let that person know what they mean to you. Because as my dear friend David Friedman says, we're all in this together, but we're not in the same boat. But if you're going to be in a boat, make sure you bring a skipper along. Now, Madonna and Robin, I'm going to leave the screen and I'm going to give each of you the final word. Anything that you want to say about anything that we talked about today that you want to build upon, anything that we didn't talk about that you wish we had, or just any message that you want to put out to anyone who's watching right now, this is your platform now. I thank you both for being here. I thank you for the gifts that you've given to the world. I thank you for the gifts that you will continue to give. And I hope that we'll stay in touch, because this has been a real pleasure today. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Richard. Do you want to go first?
No, go right ahead, babe.
Well, I would just like to thank Richard. You know, I feel like if the world was more in the energy that Richard shares, that we would all be in a better, we would all just be doing a lot better than we are. And I don't know that I have much wisdom to impart. I've just, very grateful to be here and very grateful to be able to do the work that I do, and very grateful for people who are kind and loving with one another. And yeah, that's kind of my thing. Yeah. And don't eat animals.
But what do you? I just want to thank Rose.
Yes, Rose.
Hun, oh my gosh, she was just on it. She was like, I think you guys would enjoy doing this movie. I know that we would celebrate you. So Rose, I want to thank you for that. And being so on it for us. I do. Words of wisdom, I just be kind. If you can choose to be anything, be kind. I know it's, you know, cliche, but there is something to it. So I think we need more of that.